Today is Monday, February 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, authorities in mainland China announced that the coronavirus has infected over 77,000 people and killed more than 2,500. Plus, U.S. President Donald Trump announced a new deal with India.
Tomorrow, our representatives will sign deals to sell over $3 billion in the absolute finest state-of-the-art military helicopters.
And the United Nations warned that human rights are under assault from a number of threats. Those stories and more are all next. Shares skidded, oil prices sank, and the price of gold surged on Monday as the number of people infected or killed by the viral outbreak that began in China rose, heaping more uncertainty on the economic outlook. China announced it has postponed its most important political meeting of the year because of the outbreak of the coronavirus, a significant step for an authoritarian government that has always kept a tight control on its political calendar. The COVID-19 has killed more than 2,500 people and sickened more than 77,000 in mainland China. Also, a fifth person infected with the coronavirus has died in Italy. That's according to the chief of the Civil Protection Agency. More than 200 cases are also reported in the north of Italy since Friday. Italian media said the dead patient was 88 years old and came from the region of Lombardy. Four other people who have died of the illness in Italy were also elderly, and at least three of them had been suffering serious underlying health problems. Police manned checkpoints and around quarantine towns in Italy's north on Monday as residents stocked up on food as the country became the focal point of the outbreak in Europe amid fears of its cross-border spread. Italians traveling abroad were already feeling the effects of the crackdown, with a bus from Milan barricaded by police in the French city of Lyon for health checks, and the Alitalia passengers arriving in Mauritius were possibly subject to quarantine. If we turn to the Middle East, an Iranian official says the COVID-19 outbreak has killed 50 people in the city of Qom, even as health ministry insists only 12 deaths have been recorded in the country. The new death toll reported by the Qom representative, Ahmad Arimabadi Farhani, is significantly higher than the latest number of nationwide confirmed cases of infections that Iranian officials had reported just a few hours earlier. Health ministry spokesman rejected the Qom lawmaker's claims, insisting that the death toll from the virus remains at 12. However, he did raise the number of confirmed cases of those infected by the virus to 61 and added that some 900 other suspected cases are being tested. Iraq also announced its first case, an Iranian theology student in the holy city of Najaf, who had entered the country before the government banned the entry of non-Iraqis coming from Iran. Kuwait detected the virus in three people among 700 who had been evacuated on Saturday from the Iranian city of Mashhad. In neighboring Bahrain, the health ministry said a Bahraini citizen who arrived from Iran had been diagnosed with the coronavirus. Turning to Asia and South Korea, South Korean schools closed and major events, including concerts and the opening of the top Korean football league, were indefinitely postponed on Monday as the country attempted to limit the spread of the coronavirus. VOA's Bill Gallo takes things from here, as the country has reported over 800 infections this past week.
The center of South Korea's coronavirus outbreak is the southeastern city of Daegu, where authorities urged residents to stay home. Many businesses closed. On Monday, at a large department store that did open, a long line of customers snaked around the building. They're trying to buy face masks, which in some cases have shot up in price. Masks and other emergency supplies have sold out of many stores in Seoul, which has reported a smaller surge in infections. One resident in Seoul's Jongno district says she stockpiled face masks and says she's looking to buy hand sanitizer. She says she thinks the outbreak will last a long time. South Korea saw a spike in coronavirus infections starting last week. The outbreak has raised concerns the virus is spreading outside China, where it originated, and may turn into a global pandemic. Authorities here have undertaken a massive public health campaign. Residents receive emergency text message alerts when they go near locations that have been visited by a coronavirus-infected patient. The government sends out several alerts per day in English and Korean detailing the latest infection cases. Many major office buildings use thermal cameras to monitor the temperature of people who enter. Signs on sidewalks, buses, and at train stations encourage residents to use proper hygiene. Many businesses are providing hand sanitizer. There are concerns the outbreak could hurt South Korea's economy, which had already been growing slowly. South Korea's stock market ended down almost 4% Monday. Some major South Korean companies have been forced to temporarily halt or reduce production due to a shortage of parts from China, where many factories have closed. Local businesses are also hurting from an apparent reduction in tourism. At a street side stand in Seoul's tourist area of Myeongdong, a vendor is selling a sweet red bean-filled pastry. He says his sales have plummeted by about two-thirds, and that he estimates it will take at least 6 months for the economy to recover. The outbreak also threatens to become a sensitive political issue just weeks ahead of an important legislative election. Many conservative and other critics have urged the government to tighten restrictions on the entry of people from China. An editorial in the conservative Chosun Ilbo compared the government's virus containment efforts to trying to catch flies with the windows wide open. But South Korean authorities have rejected those demands, noting the virus has now begun spreading locally among people with no links to China. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
The Hong Kong government warned residents to avoid all non-essential travel to South Korea as cases there continue to rise. U.S. President Donald Trump said Monday that the United States will sign an agreement to sell U.S. helicopters and other equipment to India's military.
We make the greatest weapons ever made. Airplanes, missiles, rockets, ships. We make the best, and we're dealing now with India. But this includes advanced air defense systems and armed and unarmed aerial vehicles. And I am pleased to announce that tomorrow our representatives will sign deals to sell over $3 billion in the absolute finest state-of-the-art military helicopters and other equipment to the Indian Armed Forces.
The announcement came as Mr. Trump spoke at a welcome rally where a crowd of more than 100,000 people had gathered to hear him and Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, speak. For analysis of the president's trip to India, I spoke with Anubhav Gupta, Associate Director of the Asia Society Policy Institute in New York.
Under the Trump administration, the one area where the two governments, the Trump government and the Modi government, have really advanced the relationship is when it comes to defense ties. They haven't made a lot of improvement and a lot of advancements on the trade front, but on defense ties and defense cooperation, there is a lot happening. And a big part of that is defense sales. So at the rally at the stadium earlier today, President Trump announced that India will be buying $3 billion worth of naval helicopters from the United States. And the two sides have also probably will announce tomorrow the sale to India of an integrated air defense system. And this is especially important for President Trump in light of the fact that he doesn't have a trade deal to announce.
Another aspect of the address that he gave in India was about response to terrorism. There's no corresponding overseas trip to Pakistan, although Prime Minister Imran Khan was in the United States not too long ago. What's your takeaway from those lines during Mr. Trump's remarks?
Well, those lines will have been taken, part of them would have been taken really well in India. One of the major goals that the Indian government has for this trip, I think, is to make sure that the U.S. government does not stop its pressure campaign to get Pakistan to crack down on terrorism that emanates from Pakistani soil and ends up impacting India adversely. And so that's a major goal for India. I think President Trump was also signaling to Indians that, you know, he remains close with Pakistan. Pakistan remains a close military military ally. And so to mention that in his speech was both, he was talking to Pakistani audiences and reassuring them that he has not forgotten them, at the same time telling India and emphasizing to India that he's serious about counterterrorism cooperation.
Those are two topics, of course, that the president did address. But what about what he didn't talk about?
The fact that he didn't talk about Kashmir, and also the fact that he didn't talk about the controversial citizenship law, I think is quite a big omission. And I think a lot of people, certainly a lot of supporters of Prime Minister Modi, will almost see that as a tacit endorsement, or if not that, at least as a sign that the U.S. White House does not really care very much about those two issues. And what you've seen this morning, actually, I was following the news, and protests and riots have now broken out in Delhi as we speak about the Citizenship Amendment Act. And so this is a controversial thing that's happening in India. It's been brewing for the past 2 months. And for the president of the United States to really not mention it certainly bodes well for the Indian prime minister politically.
And that was Asia Society Policy Institute Assistant Director Anubhav Gupta. And coming up later,
European Union leaders are still seeking a compromise on their next seven-year trillion-plus-dollar budget. They ended 2 days of talks so divided they couldn't even set a date for their next meeting.
And you're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers using a variety of space and ground-based telescopes say they have spotted a very rare system of three monster black holes that are on the path to a spectacular collision and merger. The triple black hole system was discovered at the center of three galaxies that had merged with each other. This trinary system is said to be located about a billion light years away and are each separated by distances that range between 10,000 to 30,000 light years. Astronomers say they found evidence that the giant black holes are actively feeding on surrounding material. The system was first spotted by the ground-based Sloan Digital Sky Survey in New Mexico. NASA space telescopes such as WISE, Chandra, Hubble, and NuSTAR were also used to gather data on the triple black hole system. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. An Israeli airstrike in Damascus overnight killed two members of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the militant group said on Monday. Reuters' Libby Hogan has those details.
Rocket explosions pounded the sky in Israel on Sunday, followed by sirens. This is what 24 hours of hostility sounds like from the ground near Gaza. It's part of an escalation of violence after militant group Islamic Jihad fired a barrage of rockets from Gaza into southern Israel, sending residents running for shelters. Israel struck back, launching airstrikes in Syria and around Gaza. Earlier that day, Israel said its troops killed an Islamic Jihad member who was trying to plant explosives near the border fence with Gaza. Video footage circulated online of what appeared to be a lifeless body dangling from an Israeli military bulldozer. The images caused uproar in Gaza and calls for retaliation. Israel military said its forces struck Islamic Jihad terror targets south of Damascus, as well as a dozen jihad targets through the Gaza Strip. Syrian media had reported that Israeli planes entered Syrian airspace, and its air defenses had intercepted hostile targets over the capital, Damascus.
That was Libby Hogan from Reuters News Agency. Lesotho's prime minister appeared in court Monday, but the murder case against him failed to proceed as the magistrate referred the matter to the Constitutional Court to decide whether a sitting prime minister can be charged with any crime. Prime Minister Thomas Thabane's legal team argued against him being charged. The 80-year-old leader is accused of murder, the 2017 killing of his estranged wife, Lipulelo. His current wife, Masaya, already has been charged after briefly fleeing to neighboring South Africa. Last week, the prime minister himself left for South Africa for what his lawyer called medical reasons, missing a court appearance. Malaysia's Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad unexpectedly resigned Monday, leaving the country in political turmoil and drawing calls from some quarters for the world's oldest leader to return at the head of a new government. Reuters' Joe Davies reports the fate of Malaysia's ruling coalition has been in doubt all weekend.
There have been talks between some of its members and opposition groups on forming a new government that would exclude Mahathir's anointed successor, Anwar Ibrahim. The pair joined forces to win the 2018 election and oust the long-running United Malays National Organisation. But the alliance was based on a promise that Mahathir, the world's oldest prime minister, would eventually cede power to Anwar. The 72-year-old was finance minister and deputy prime minister in the 1990s, before he was twice jailed for sodomy and convictions that troubled human rights groups. On Sunday, Anwar accused Mahathir's party and traitors in his own of plotting to form a new government with the United Malays National Organisation. But after a meeting with Mahathir on Monday, he was sounding more positive. Mahathir's Bersatu party has quit the ruling coalition, along with 11 lawmakers from Anwar's PKR party. Anwar was due to meet with the king on Monday. It's not clear if he has the political support to stake a claim on forming a government. It's also not clear if Mahathir's resignation will be accepted. If it is, despite a previous promise that Anwar would assume power, for the time being at least, it is Anwar's wife, the current deputy prime minister, who would be the highest figure in the government.
That was Reuters' Joe Davies. European Union leaders are still seeking a compromise on their next seven-year trillion-plus dollar budget. Lisa Bryant reports leaders extended or ended 2 days of talks so divided they couldn't even set a date for their next meeting.
European unity over Brexit talks was nowhere to be seen during this first meeting since Britain's departure from the EU. Leaders of the 27 remaining members ended budget talks Friday, acknowledging the gridlock.
Je le regrette très profondément. Durant ces deux jours, d'abord nous avons
The tone was set by the EU's most powerful members. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said the differences were too big to overcome, while French President Emmanuel Macron said the deadlock was deeply regrettable. We don't need Britain to show disunity, he added.
Il y a eu des débats très durs ces deux derniers jours et la nuit passée autour de la PAC.
But inaugurating the annual agricultural fair in Paris Saturday, Macron underscored just why the divisions remain so strong. He told French farmers he remained firm in defending the EU's biggest budget item, agricultural subsidies, of which France is a top beneficiary. These kinds of no-go zones are being staked out by other member states, poorer, mostly Eastern European nations, and five countries that currently get rebates want a more generous budget. Meanwhile, the so-called frugal four, Austria, Denmark, the Netherlands, and Sweden, don't want the budget to exceed 1% of the bloc's gross national income. At the same time, the EU's new executive arm has outlined ambitious new goals, including achieving zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Those will also need funding or risk being scaled down. Then there's the $65 billion budget hole left by Britain's departure, which needs filling. EU leaders say they are confident a compromise will be struck.
Moi, je veux simplement ce soir considérer avec beaucoup de sobriété, mais aussi avec de la ténacité, de la détermination.
European Council President Charles Michel says the bloc has no choice but to reach a decision. The question is when. Analyst Marta Pilotti of the Brussels-based European Policy Center Research Group says the longer talks drag on, the more likely EU-funded programs will be affected next year.
The first consequence of non-agreement is that we would have a delay in implementation, which in practice means that the EU will not be able to disburse funding to the programs so that they can start in January, but maybe that will happen in March, April of next year.
The current budget expires in December. After EU leaders reach agreement on the next one, the European Parliament will need to ratify it, which also promises to be complicated. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Violent anti-government protests replaced carnival celebrations on Sunday in the Haitian capital of Port-au-Prince. Reuters' Gloria So has more.
A police protest in Haiti turned violent this weekend during a street rally over low pay.
The sounds of gun battles and the smell of tear gas replaced celebrations for Carnival in the capital of Port-au-Prince. It wasn't immediately clear who fired the shots or gas. However, it's just the latest flare-up of a nation in crisis. Haiti has been racked by a prolonged economic emergency. Anger boiled over on Sunday as police questioned why there was enough money left for Carnival, but seemingly not enough for officers' livelihoods.
We don't want Carnival. Second, we support the police protesters who are demanding a union. The lack of security in this country is the fault of Jovenel Moïse. He uses the army to destroy the police. Various police officers have been wounded by bullets. There is one who died. We say to the people that we need to keep going until the end.
Sunday's protest is just one of several this year. President Jovenel Moïse has been ruling by decree since January after the country failed to hold elections. The worsening political situation has cut Haiti off from much-needed international funding. The country is the poorest in the Americas, and losing funding has hamstrung its ability to respond to spiraling crises, including massive food shortages. One in every three Haitians, or around 3.7 million people, are in need of food assistance.
That was Reuters reporter Gloria So. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warns human rights are under assault from a multitude of threats, including the climate crisis, the misuse of digital technology, and power-hungry leaders. Lisa Schlein reports Guterres launched a call to action to advance and protect the human rights of all peoples at the opening of the 43rd session of the UN Human Rights Council.
UN Chief Antonio Guterres calls human rights the ultimate tool to help societies grow in freedom. He laments the erosion of these rights, noting that no country is immune.
We see civilians trapped in war-torn enclaves, starved and bombarded in clear violation of international law. Human trafficking affecting every region in the world, preying on vulnerability and despair. People are being left behind. Fears are growing, divisions are widening, and some leaders are exploiting anxieties to broaden those gaps to the breaking point.
Guterres says his call to action aims to tackle all forms of inequality and eliminate all forms of discrimination. He says it will focus on several specific areas of particular concern, mentioning no country by name. He says the campaign aims to lift people out of abject poverty so they have equal access to opportunity and choice. He notes some of the greatest tests faced by human rights occur when conflicts erupt, terrorists attack, or disaster strikes. But he adds human rights and humanitarian law can support people even in their darkest moments.
Let me also underscore that even necessary efforts to combat terrorism must not compromise human rights. Otherwise, counter-terror actions will be counterproductive. This call to action recognizes that respect for human rights is an essential crisis prevention mechanism. But when prevention fails short and violence is rampant, people need protection.
Guterres pledges the United Nations, with the necessary support of the international community, will be there to protect those in need. He says the UN, with the help of others, will be there to protect the rights of minorities, to ensure gender equality and equal rights for women. He says all necessary efforts will be made to safeguard people's right to freedom of expression, religion, and assembly. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Pioneering NASA mathematician Katherine Johnson has died at the age of 101. The AP's Margie Zaraletta takes this look at her career.
NASA tweets it is celebrating the life of Katherine Johnson, her legacy of excellence, and her work to break down racial barriers. Johnson was one of the so-called computers who calculated rocket trajectories and Earth orbits by hand in the early days of the space program. She and other black women worked in a racially segregated computing unit of what's now the Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia. Johnson was portrayed by Taraji P. Henson in the 2016 film Hidden Figures. Johnson received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest honor, in 2015. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Jackson Vungani, and engineer P.J. Elliott, thank you very much for spending part of your day with us. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.